Hello and welcome to Super Respectable. My name is Toshio Rahman from Vancouver, Canada. I'm with my friend Dave, David Lewis from the Netherlands. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tosh.
What's up?
Every day is Groundhog Day. Actually, Groundhog Day was last week, right?
Yeah.
Do you know if the groundhog showed the shadow? What's the rule? I never know.
He was wearing a mask here in Vancouver, so because of COVID, so we don't know.
He's been quarantined, not allowed.
We were just talking before we started recording, man. This is starting to like really get to everyone now. It's just craziness now. It's like a joke, huh? It's just surreal that it's been almost 14 months.
Yeah, I'd very much like to be where you are in your Zoom background with the beach there. It looks very socially distanced.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be like once people feel that they're able to travel freely, if everyone's just going to get on a plane and start a new pandemic by everyone meeting up in different locations.
I wonder if it'll be one of those things that because it's been so long, it'll be like you know, when like you suddenly see sunlight after a long time, your eyes are squinting and you're like, this is a beautiful place. How do things operate?
Will you start shaking people's hands again or like touching people?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question.
I don't think I will.
Yeah, let's just elbow it from.
I like the elbow thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I wonder if some people will have like, you know how when, you know how like sometimes human nature is that when you're allowed to do something, you still are a little hesitant afterwards, a little like OCD, you know? I wonder if some people will sort of like be OCD with certain things because they've been doing it for so long under COVID, you know? Like some people keep wearing masks for no reason.
Distance.
So like, I don't know. There should be a reintegration into society process.
Yeah, we need to be retrained on how to socialize with other people.
Yeah.
But the elbow thing I think would be really helpful because I always find it difficult, especially in Europe, the greetings, it can be really complicated because when Canada, the cheek to cheek kissing.
Yeah.
And some countries it's just one kiss, some it's two, some it's like one side or the other.
Yeah.
And handshake is simple, but also it's like when you greet a lady versus a man, sometimes there's a difference that it's expected. But I think a universal elbow or a bow like the Japanese do, I'm very happy with that.
This will be the Super Respectable movement. Let's standardize an international greeting system.
I think I'll bow.
Like the Japanese?
But there's like levels of bowing, right? If you bow very low, it means you've done something terribly wrong and you have to apologize. Or if you bow to a certain level compared to someone who's more senior than you, you have to figure out. So that's also complicated. So maybe the elbow is the solution.
I don't know if you remembered or not, but just as a comic relief, do you remember a few years back, President Obama went to Japan and he bowed to the prime minister or to the king or whatever, and in traditional Japanese fashion. And the Republicans were like, no American president should bow to anyone else because I was like, this is so stupid.
Just cheap political points, eh?
Yeah, but I mean, I have a soft spot for Japan because that was my country of birth, right? So I just think the Japanese do everything perfectly. So, you know, their culture. I actually had this discussion. I have this discussion with everyone that I was like, I love Japanese architecture. I love Japanese food. I love the way the Japanese are so easygoing and like strict and disciplined. Maybe we can learn. I'm not advocating for bowing. I'm just saying that it's one of many ways of greetings, you know, why not?
I'd really like to see what it would be like when some Italians go to Japan, because for me, that's like the ultimate contrast in cultures where, you know, Japanese are orderly waiting in line. And the stereotype I have, which has been proven by my various trips to Italy, is like, even when the plane is about to land, everyone's getting up and grabbing their bags.
That's a funny comparison because also Italians are very like loud and like rambunctious people, and the Japanese are very quiet and like disciplined and like, you know, like very, very organized. And like, it'd be funny to see them both of them interact in a setting. That'd be funny.
I'm very keen on that kind of interaction.
We should find a Japanese person, an Italian person, and make it work. But let's see what happens. I mean, you on a podcast, it'd be hilarious because you'd have one person screaming over the other person not even talking, like very quiet. I But just to balance it out, what's your favorite thing about Italy or Japan? And I'll tell you mine, so we can say that at least there's positives.
Oh man, I mean, I haven't been to Japan, but I have like,
from your interactions and
impressions. I like the order and efficiency, and I like the quirkiness of it. So there's like what I see a lot of weird things that you only see in Japan.
Yeah.
And for Italy, food.
Yeah.
And just the lifestyle, the freedom, the, you know, the joie de vivre, which is not Italian.
Yeah, I think, do you remember when we were in university? Do you remember, I had a friend from Japan, Shinichi. Did I ever introduce you to him at Carleton?
Maybe once or twice, yeah.
Shinichi Takoro. And he was like from Japan. He was there doing his master's or PhD at Carleton. And he was the epitome of Japanese culture, discipline, politeness, attitude, you know, very, very quiet guy, but very like clean, strict, like, you know. And I was like, this is cool. Like, this is very cool. And I told Halima, my wife, that if we go to Japan, one of the top things I want to do is go to the Sushi Master restaurant that I know of. And I want to pay $200 and have the sushi master make me like sushi in front of me. I don't care. Oh. I'll save it and I'll save for it. But I need the sushi.
Is that the Michelin starred sushi place? Yeah. Like where it's just really, really precise, small pieces.
And... Yeah. He has a documentary. It's called I Dream Giro. Yeah. That guy. It's in some like subway station in Tokyo.
Is he still alive? I mean, he was really old at the time of the...
I'm not sure. If it's not him, his son is taking over.
But his son was equally well-trained. Yeah.
Because I love sushi, and then in Italy, then I'll just go eat pasta. I have no problem alternating between the carbohydrates.
Yeah, it's hard. Like we went to Italy in September in that small window last year where we could travel before the second and third and fourth and fifth waves of coronavirus hit.
Oh yeah,
and it was really cool being in Rome when there was no other tourists there besides us and a few other people.
Yeah.
And it kind of made a difference because when a place becomes over-touristed, like Italian food isn't typically that hard to make.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Italians will have huge debates over what ingredients should go into the dish.
Yeah.
In general, you should make a pasta with a few like a meat sauce or a tomato sauce or this and that.
Yeah.
But like, in Rome, there's just so many tourists that like some of the restaurants you'd still get crap food. So that's what I find hard about going to beautiful places like that are over touristed.
Yeah.
Like you still have to kind of poke around and find like the good stuff, like this sushi place that's underneath a metro stop somewhere. So you really have to do your work to find the good stuff.
Are you one of those people that when you travel, restaurants and food in your destination is a key part of the travel? Like, you
know,
you research it. I'm going to this restaurant, this restaurant, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of a OCD problem I have with that because
no, not at all. I think it's a big part of travel. You know.
Well, yeah, it's weird how it goes because it kind of kills the spontaneity of travel where, you know, let's just try this place and see how it goes. Yeah. But also maybe there's no reason to be spontaneous with things and just find the right place.
I think when you travel, what are the things that you do either individually or as a family? It's you eat, you see the sights, you just relax. And if eating is a big part of travel, I think.
Eating.
You know? So, I mean... Yeah, like you just have, and now with TripAdvisor, those Lonely Planet books, apps, you can definitely find places that you want to go try out. And it's kind of sad sometimes when you go to a place and they don't have, like, it's like similar to your cultural food. So it's not like a unique experience, but nevertheless, there's always like good food to try somewhere. And if it makes you happy and you're on holiday, why not? Right? Because you're not eating out all the time back home.
Yeah, it can very quickly add up if you're in a fairly pricey location, having three meals out a day.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's always the problem. But it's also one of the key enjoyment.
But, you know, like, actually, it's so funny you said that. I was thinking about this yesterday. I was just financially going through, like, what do we spend our money on, like, expenses? Mm-hmm. And, like, we're pretty easygoing people. Like, we don't really buy a lot of material things that we don't need. I think the number one expense for us is just eating out, right? We might go out to eat for, like, get a coffee here, get a pastry there, go out for dinner 2-3 times here. I think food is our highest, what would you say, like, leisurely expense. I don't know if you guys, if that follows suit for you or not. I know you don't buy a lot of like clothes and either, but I didn't mean that in a negative way. I just meant like, you know, you focus on the important things in life, not the material things.
Yeah, I like to experience things. But now that's been deprived of me. So yeah, definitely eating out and going to bars and trying different things. You know, that was the thing, especially in Europe. There's lots of options.
Yeah. I hope it goes well. But what we're talking about is somewhat related to the topic at hand.
Really?
There's a good segue there. So I, ever since I was like in my teens, I've been obsessed with like living forever. and it was more of an obsessive weird thing when I was young, and now I've sort of like let it go. But I'm really interested in like health and fitness and lifestyle and looking at people who live for a long time. So I thought I'd talk about the blue zones around the world. Do you know what those are?
Is it the places where people live a long time, Okinawa and Cuba?
You pretty much nailed it. So I actually used to think it was the places, but it's actually a term for the lifestyle for of people who live over 100 years or more around the world. And so we're pretty much talking about centenarians, 100 or more. That's a tough one.
Ten cents
people. Let's do it like that. So I actually learned about this a long time back, and I was interested in it and a lot. These researchers, I mean, longevity has been studied for a long time. That's a stupid sentence I just said. But
longevity has been a very long.
But it's been documented and kind of publicized more in recent days because people have this fascination with, you know, how can I duplicate the lifestyle? Where is it around the world? What can I do? So there are actually five major places around the world that have been focused in on, but I'm going to talk about the top three, the three ones that were the original three. So like I said, they're blue zones, which means they have the highest ratio of people 100 or more, 100 years or more. In all the places, there is an argument that it's only 20% genetics that have gotten these people to 100 plus and 80% lifestyle. So there's hope for all of us, all of us still. And the first one is actually related to what you were saying. It's in Italy. It's in a place called Acciaroli. It's in Sardinia, which I think is an island. Right?
Amazing.
Have you've been?
Yeah.
Tell us about it. Was it when you went there, were you like, I could get to 100 years plus?
Well, I've been to Sardinia, but I don't know that I've been to this particular place. But
yeah,
Sardinia was an incredible place to go for scenery, food.
Really?
Very healthy.
Yeah.
Just really good memories. The food was incredible.
Oh, because that's a big part of it. Okay, so let me do my presentation, and throughout I'm going to ask you some questions because I've never been. But food is a huge part of the reason people get to 100. So in this small village of Acciaroli, they have a huge population of 100 plus people. It has the highest male concentration of people who get to over 100 in the world, which is very remarkable. Just to put it in perspective, in this place, 1 in 60 people get to 90. In comparison, in Canada, 1 in 163 people get to 90. So this place is almost three times, has more 90-year-olds than Canada. When looking at the reasons for why people have such an old age, and this is a common theme that comes through, they look at the idea that these people are always moving, they're always walking, working the land, outdoors. They're very family oriented people as well. I think you can attest to that by being in Italy as well. There's a sense of multiple generations either living together or being close together, providing support and community. They found that a lot of these people have no dementia, no Alzheimer's, no heart disease, which is remarkable, no blood diseases or blood pressure. They're a very resilient group of people, emotionally and physically. They've lived through two world wars. Of course, you got to remember, so if you're 100 now in 2021, that's one world war, right? That's 1921. But say it was 10 years back or 20 years back. They've lived through famines. They lived through some very disastrous parts of history. And generally, they say that these people have a lot, like just live in a very stress-free, anxiety-free environmental lifestyle. And just to add on to that, the Mediterranean diet has been attributed to their lifestyle as well. So Mediterranean diet, if I know correctly, is a lot of beans, healthy grains, veggies, fruits, less on the meat and the dairy, sardines, like more kind of organic foods in the area. So it's really interesting. So because of this, they find that in this one little area in Italy, you have a huge population of 100+ people, and they seem very healthy and happy, and they don't even look that old. What were your experiences there? Did you find that the environment was very conducive to old age?
Yeah, I mean, I only spent a week there, and it was kind of the northern coast of Sardinia.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the environment, because I've been to Sicily and Sardinia.
Yeah.
You know, the two big Italian islands, and Sicily is a lot more internationally well known for various reasons, but it's a bit more impoverished than Sardinia. Sardinia has a certain level of wealth.
Yeah.
So that kind of maybe helps things a bit. But definitely the food was very healthy.
Yeah.
Not much fried food. It was fresh fish, a lot of fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one of the best meals of my life because they have these agriturismos, they're called. They're basically farms that'll open up a restaurant on site. And you basically eat a lot of the stuff that was grown on the farm or the neighboring farms. And we went to one, and it was just incredible amount of food. It's hard for me to describe the variety of dishes. And normally in maybe North America, you'd expect to be totally stuffed and you'd be waddling out of there, which is kind of true, but like it was many courses, but each course was rather, you know, manageable. And there was a main course, of course, but taken as a whole, it was like, you know, you take your time, you have wine, but it's not like you drink like a Anglo-Saxon would drink and just totally fall off your chair.
Yeah.
So there's many different aspects. Like I certainly think, yeah, it's sort of a lifestyle you could see yourself getting used to, but.
Did you find, some people say that like when you're eating kind of more natural, organic, like real foods, the taste is like unbelievable compared to its alternative. Did you find that the food was just like just taste different? Like,
oh, totally.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't verify that everything came from like that particular farm, but it certainly felt very fresh, and you can kind of tell a difference, right? Like when a strawberries are in season, you know, in Canada, or you know, certain blueberries or whatever it is that's you know, in the summertime, versus something that you buy in January and they're like inflated, full of water, and you don't have the same kind of taste. There's definitely that element to it where you can be like, this is how this vegetable or fruit should taste. Not from the grocery store in some way. So yeah, definitely.
So I mean, if you lived in Acciarola, Italy, you could be 100+. Like that could definitely be a lifestyle if you see yourself living there. So like just move around, eat good foods.
I mean, I wouldn't mind living to 100 as long as it's a healthy 100 and not like the last 10 years I'm kind of struggling along.
Very good point. So in all three case studies, these were like active, healthy 100-year-olds. You know, these weren't people who are suffering. These are people who just continue, like you wouldn't even know that they're 100 in a lot of the situations. And so like it was a community effort. I think here, here in North America, you might meet one or two people that kind of get to that point, but a lot of people in their older ages really are suffering. And I find in the Western world, like, I mean, dementia, Alzheimer's, blood pressure. In Bangladesh, you might have all three, like, you know, so like, it's really not an enjoyable 100, you know what I'm saying? But in these places, people were still active, which is really amazing, right? Which I think is a testament to the human spirit and the human body, right? So, it's amazing stuff.
Yeah, and I think the good point there is the connection to family and the benefits there, because, you know, during this coronavirus time, a lot of us have been separated from the family connections.
Yeah,
and it's a huge, human element that's been taken away for well-being.
Yeah.
Which, you know, people are showing that it's increasingly important for, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's and these things, just to have, like, these kind of really good in-depth connection with people.
And I think in Italy, like that family aspect is very important. I've read that even in these places, like people will like families will live close together or if not together, but they'll even eat meals together each day, right? Like they'll come around, you have grandparents with grandchildren with in-laws and this and that. There's just a community sense. And then of course you have your friends too, right? But that aspect of being with others is crucial to kind of psychological and physical health.
Yeah, and in the kind of area where we were, you could see that people knew each other by name, and there were older people, but they were supported by younger people, and it wasn't like the young generation ignored the old generation completely. I'm sure there's an element of that, but there's a lot more of a connection along generations.
Well, I mean that's very much related to our second case study in Okinawa, which is an island in Japan. And whereas in Italy, Akiolo, Italy, where it had the largest male concentration of centen of men
Well,
of
on centenarians,
centenarians. Yes, you got it, centenarians. Yeah, centenarians.
centenarians.
We apologize
That is a
to
hard word.
all. Okinawa has the largest concentration of female centenarians in the world, so it's the opposite. So that's really interesting
Oh, we should
too.
start a dating site for the Italians and the Okinawans
Just like we were
to
talking about earlier.
meet up to
That's a
connect.
great idea, a startup. So they looked at what some of the attributes for these individuals, very similar things. The diets are actually a little different in that up until the 1960s, 60% of their diet was one food. It was the purple sweet potato. Have you ever had one?
Not that I can remember.
Oh, they're really good. It's like a normal sweet potato, but it's purple, obviously, and it's a very, I think it's more in the Japanese environment. They use it for like yam dishes and this. It's very filling. It's very healthy. So this was a huge part of their diet. It's changed a little now, but now they add tofu, turmeric, a lot of vegetables, gardens. So a lot of it is vegetarian based. They grow their own food, just like I'm sure the Italians do as well. They're very kind of, they don't, you don't find a McDonald's in Okinawa or whatnot. So they're
Maybe for
very,
the American base, there's that huge thing. Yeah.
So food is a huge part, natural organic foods. The cultural aspect of being in a community is very important, just like the Italians as well. They were saying that like sometimes these women would be like, who've been friends for like 65, 75 years would come together every night and just gossip and talk and just kind of be with one another. If somebody was missing, they'd go find out what's happening because it's such a tight-knit community. The idea of being lonely was very negatively looked upon in this culture. Being lonely is a very bad thing. In fact, scientifically, they said that being lonely can take 8 years off your life, which
Wow.
is it's like almost equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So
Oh, wow.
there's a really big part, like you were saying as well, that societal aspect. There's no word for retirement in Japanese language, so these people are all just moving and working just kind of their whole lives. And when we say working, I don't mean like in the monetary sense, but I mean just doing things for themselves, right? Being able to go pick up like the fruits and vegetables from the garden, to be able to go down to the store up and down. You're not really sitting around. And that's something I think I always tell other people, like one thing I don't like about the way my culture, the East Indian Bangladeshi culture, is that we don't give like a lot of like encouragement to our older elders to like keep doing things for themselves, the independence. We really just see them as like older people and like, no, you sit down, I'll do everything for you. I think it kind of creates like a cycle of laziness a little bit. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean, in the Japanese system, I've seen for the older people, they're always moving around, and there's actually this picture I'll post it on our thing. There's a picture of a 101-year-old lady holding her like great great grandchild who's like 1 or 2 years old, and it's like five generations or four generations. It's really cool. So I really realized, I think Japanese people, like we were saying, they have, generally speaking, they have very, I know now culturally McDonald's and KFC Christmas and all that stuff is coming, but generally they had really good diets. Like their foods were very very on point, when it comes to health. And so these guys have just taken it to a new level.
But there is like Okinawa, am I pronouncing that correctly? They're kind of unique in Japan in some sense, because I hear stories about how in Tokyo and Osaka, the big cities, there's a lot of like these shut-ins, like young men who just don't leave their apartment, and they're like super isolated, super lonely. They get like totally cut off from society, and they're like, don't get their salary job, and they feel like failures, and they just spend all day long playing video games.
I think that's, I've heard stuff like in modern Japan and in the large cities, you know, people are overworked, they're overstressed, they're high achievers, you know, here suicide rates are like for young people are like skyrocketing. So I guess in Okinawa, it's a little removed from all of that. People are still a little slower paced.
It looks a bit like your background. It's got a bit of a tropical vibe, right?
My gosh, I saw a picture. It was beautiful.
Have you been?
I've never been. We should take our show there.
We should.
It's I'd love to go because I really think it'd be amazing. So yeah, like that's cool. What was I gonna say? I think Okinawa and Italy, Japan and Italy have a lot of similarities, and that actually kind of goes to our third group, very surprisingly in America. And there's a place in California called Loma Linda. It's a little town. I've never been there. And they have one of the highest rates of the elderly, and a lot of I'm sorry, I couldn't do it.
Centurions.
It was really strange. The guy who led the project was like, you know, I've traveled all over the world, and then they're like, just take the highway from your house and then get off on this exit, you know? And so he got there, and there's a community of Seventh-day Adventists. And for those people who don't know, Seventh-day Adventists are a type of Christianity. They're more more Bible-based. They follow what's textual there. And so Seventh-day Adventists follow the Bible in terms of diet and lifestyle. So they have a Sabbath as well, from Friday, like the Jewish people, from Friday night until Saturday night. And it's during this time they pretty much stop all work and spend time with family. So Seventh-day Adventists are doing this. At the same time, they focus on their family, as I said, going to church, doing a lot of walks outside, and their diets. And their diets are straight from the Bible. 80, it's mostly plant-based, lots of seeds and nuts, pulses. I think a pulse is like a potato, right?
Yeah.
Like a potato or a tuber or something like that. Or pulses.
No, like beans and things.
Oh,
right?
Beans.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like lentils and that type of couscous,
yeah.
Maybe.
Lots of fruits and veggies. So they don't eat a lot of meat, if not any. They stick away from it. They hang out with each other a lot. They have their own little communities built here in this little subset of California. They work out. And there's this amazing picture of this 90-year-old Seventh-day Adventist who's a surgeon, and he's an active surgeon. He like keeps performing because he's still good to go at this age. So it just shows you it doesn't really matter geographically where you are as opposed to actual lifestyle decisions.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I was thinking like there's so many countries now where they've got a level of wealth where anybody, if they wanted to be, could be the healthiest person based on diet.
Yeah.
You know, they'd stand a good chance of living to 100 if they stuck to the diet, because they have the money, they have the groceries and the produce to do that. So like Kuwait, Qatar, a lot of these Middle Eastern countries, yeah. US, Canada, like obesity rates in these countries are off the charts. So that's like, if people are just given like free rein to do whatever they want,
yeah.
Some instances they'll just like pig out and go to all you can eat and fast food. Totally. So it's like, I don't know how those ways of lifestyles have changed and how that's been allowed to happen so quickly in some places.
I mean, a lot of our decisions you just said it, lifestyle is the key, right? I don't think these people even think of like their life as like dieting or exercise or like intentional dieting or exercise. It's just the way they live their life, and they've been kind of, they've grown up in this system where it's like, you know, I think like, oh, I got to go exercise now, like, you know, intentionally. I got to make smart, healthy choices with food. But, you know, like, I don't think these people have ever even tasted like sugar before, you know, or like processed food. So like,
yeah, they don't even, that's the thing though. It's like, that's the normal life. I would imagine like in California, I see California as a place where it's like experimental in terms of diet. So a lot of these Atkins diets, maybe that didn't come from California, but any kind of like fad diet.
Totally.
It comes from California in my mind.
Like keto.
What do they just think?
Keto's
like,
definitely,
what can
something.
We do?
Yeah.
to get fit this month.
Yeah.
It becomes like a global trend.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't really change too much except for this group of Seventh-day Adventists. So like, you know, California is a super rich state within the US, and they have, again, every resource. It's a big agricultural producer.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, there's the temptations all around you of McDonald's and Burger King and In-N-Out Burger, whatever it's called. So
White Castle and
White Castle. I never had White Castle.
I just listing the burger joints. I think a lot of it is just intentional, right? I mean, community helps. Actually, like if you look at all three places, the scientists have actually come up with 8 common themes, which lead to the longevity issue. So they all agree that it's not due to your own genetics at all. I mean, it is important, but the more pressing issue is the environment and the choices that you make, like we were saying. So they found these 8 areas. Number one, exercising. A lot of these people exercise daily, and it's not the same exercise as we know it, you know, where it's intentional 30 minutes in the gym. They're just walking everywhere. They're gardening. They're working. They're just moving their bodies. You know, this is how they've grown up. This is what it's like. And so I would say whether you exercise intentionally or unintentionally, as long as you're moving, I think it's good for you, right? I mean, the more you move, the better it is. Because I've also heard on the other side, I've read reports of people who are like 90 who are like pumping iron and stuff like that, you know? So like, I think movement is key. Number two is to have have whatever keeps you stress-free and in line in the world. So whether that's prayer, napping through the day, having daily rituals, whatever keeps you in line and reduces your stress is important. I know in some cultures it's religious, in other cultures they take a break in the middle of the day if you have something to do. Whatever causes you to reduce your stress, keep doing it. Because I think stress is such a big part of longevity as well, right? People who are stressed can really take years off your life. It can be a really negative effect on you.
Yeah, I guess there's a balance, because if they're too relaxed, then it's like, are you sedentary and not doing anything? You're not challenging yourself at all.
Yeah.
So it's like there's like good stress and bad stress in some senses.
Yeah.
But taking it back to Italy again, I was really thrown off by the idea of like the midday break, siesta. I thought that was just a Spanish thing, but a lot of the Mediterranean countries do it.
Yeah.
And it made me tense. It actually made me a bit stressed out.
Yeah.
I was
like,
why can't I go buy something in a shop at 3 p.m.? I want to go spend money. These people are late. Then you realize it's just a different way of doing things. They reopen later and they serve people later.
It's the product of how we were raised, right? We're like, work.
Yeah, don't stop.
I know. So the third common theme they found was that a lot of these cultures they needed to find a purpose in their life, right? They're like what is the reason for your life? If you don't have a purpose, it could take up to 8 years off your life, theoretically, you know, they were saying. So all these people knew, whether it was family or community or contributing or work or whatever it was, there was a purpose to life that they actively were pursuing. Number four, and this is the one I think most people are interested in, is that a drink and diet, the way it was organized. So in most of these communities, 90 to 100% of their food was plant-based, high complex carbs, a lot of grains, greens, tubers, nuts, and beans. Apparently, a cup of beans a day could add up to 4 years to your life. So it's a good tidbit there.
But then, is your life enjoyable for those 4 years? Because you're eating beans every day. I mean,
valid point. I guess.
I mean, people around you would be kind of upset that you're starving all the time. And yeah.
I guess you can. I like beans. I have no problem with beans and stuff like that. you can mix them in. What's your? Do you guys eat beans? Are you a bean?
Yeah, beans. I don't discriminate. Any kind of pulses and that sort of thing. I like a mix. You know, variety is the spice of life. I really
there
like.
You go. I noticed when I was living in Morocco, they loved beans, and I loved beans before too. But I love like they had what do you call them? Like chickpeas. You know, there's different names for chickpeas and garbanzo bean and this and that. But they used to have this one in a soup, and on like a cold day, it was so good. You could go get it for 1 dirham, which in a cup. And it was so good. So I definitely think beans, I think one thing we've done really, I'll talk about this, in the West is that we're so focused on meat products, I think, or I think it's starting to shift now, but there's a lot of like healthy vegetarian, vegan options, which can just make you feel better. But I guess these people in these three places have really adapted to that. So meat intake is very low in these places in the world. They say 5 times or less a month. Yeah, fish and seafood are there too, but still it's not like a primary staple. Very important, no cow's milk, no dairy. And this is a common theme I've picked up across, not only here, but in other places too. A lot of people have shifted to like almond milk or oat milk or natural dairy substitutes, but not the actual dairy itself. And not as much alcohol as you'd think. Yeah, it's there, but it's not like a principal staple. A couple glasses here and there, you know, a week. Large breakfast, medium lunch, small dinner, common. You know, eat like a breakfast like a, what is it? Breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, dinner like a pauper or something like that.
Sounds about right.
Sounds about right. Pretty much your largest meal is breakfast and then you downgrade, you know? And I think that's a really smart ideology, going to bed on a big stomach. I know it feels good at the time, but it can really just kill you the next day. And so like a light dinner, I think is nice. Always eating with family, you know, or people, never eating alone, going back to that loneliness thing. Keeping family close is a common theme as well.
And your enemies closer.
And your enemies closer. Sure, at least a social, I guess. You have something. You have a purpose in life.
Exactly.
These groups had some type of religious affiliation, something to go to, church, mosque, synagogue, temple. Oh,
my longevity is really sounding really bad right now with all
I'm sure you do a lot of things, dude. And the last point is this: surround yourself with the right type of people. Have a good surrounding, good society. Have you ever heard of that statistic that if three of your friends are obese, you have a 150% chance of being obese too? So like pretty much it's just like surround yourself with the type of people you'd like to be, you know? So
I've cut out all the fat people from my life. So that's really made a big difference.
Yeah. Great. So I was going to ask you a couple questions. Is that, and then get your opinions on them. So what do you think is, in your opinion, not statistically and stuff, do you think this idea of exercise and leading to longevity is important, in your opinion, for yourself, or active exercise, inactive exercise? The way these guys are doing it is that they're not actively like going out and doing it. It's just part of their life. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the right mentality, but it's just hard to do it in practice. So for people who are doing, you know, a 9-to-5 job and they got kids and, you know, all the usual things. Of course you're going to be kept busy with your kids and stuff, but the way that their schedule is set out is such that you have to be like, at this time I will go for a run in the park, or at this time I will go to the gym and lift the weights.
Yeah.
But in the places where you've mentioned, for the most part, they're kind of, you know, not really urban locations, and the types of lifestyles that they're leading are outdoorsy and kind of what humans are meant to do.
Conducive to the environment is conducive to the lifestyle.
Like, they always say sitting is the new smoking. So everything's the new smoking these days, but I understand that. And they say it's so important. I read something where it's just like, it's not even about your posture while you're sitting at the computer. It's about how much you move throughout the day. They're like, you shouldn't even worry so much about like, are you sitting up straight or is this? Wow, it's like, how many times within your 8-hour shift at work are you actually getting up and going for a walk, or just moving around? It's far more important. Yeah. So just like keeping steady motion and active, that kind of thing, is probably more important than, you know, training for a marathon and like carving out that 1 hour. Because I read it actually, there's a very good book for all of our listeners. I think the author is Bill Bryson.
Okay.
He had this book called The Body. It's like the human, like the everyday reader's guide to the body. And there's loaded with stats. It's very overwhelming, but it's very accessible. He's like, you can't really make up your lost movement throughout the day. You can't be like, I'm going to sit for 8 hours, then I'm going to move for the next, you know, 4 hours before bed to catch up for that. It's like they've studied it, and it's like, it's about constant movement throughout the day. And that's what I guess these people are doing in these countries, just to keep it going.
I'm sure, like, even if you told them about, like, gym equipment or treadmills or this and they're like, we're just, what's that? Like, you know,
that's weird.
Yeah, I think it's this idea that, like, I just have to do everything myself, right? So, like, you know, they probably live in small communities where they can walk to the store, no need to take a car, right? So there's something, you know, maybe they live in an apartment or they have to go up and down stairs. They got to, move things themselves. So I think they've incorporated unintentionally into their daily life, which I think is really, really great.
I think, yeah, like you mentioned, something very important is the car. The car is a wonderful invention, but also very devastating to this kind of 100-year lifestyle.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So, what do you think about the food and the diet focus? So mostly plant-based, grains, greens, beans, minimal meat.
You know, I understand. I understand that that's important, but
you're decreasing your life with meat and McDonald's. Yeah,
but no, like it doesn't even need to be McDonald's meat. I tried going vegetarian for I think a week once, yeah. And I snapped, and maybe I should have just pushed through. And
what was it that you craved so much that you needed to like go back?
Just craved the flavor of meat. And I'm not even like at this point in my life for the like last few years. I have meat in every day.
Oh yeah, me too.
Maybe 3 days a week are vegetarian only, like breakfast, lunch, dinner. Which is pretty good, but I don't think I could ever go to like, you know, full on, cool.
Or
what you mentioned, like 5 times a month. No, can't do it.
So I've been on this active thing where like I've been vegan for a week and I felt great. I was vegetarian for 2 years when I was a kid.
Were you?
Yeah, actively, like just because my friend did it, so I did it too. And with fish though, so like pescatarian, I guess. And I don't really remember how I felt. I was too young, but I'm trying to eat less dairy and meat products generally as a life. I'm not omitting it completely, but like if I can find a substitute, for example, I will take it. Like I don't drink normal cow's milk anymore. I find that I just get upset stomach and stuff when I drink it. So oatmeal or almond milk or whatever is fine with me. And I find that, by the way, like for example, in the mornings and stuff, I'm a big oatmeal guy. So like oatmeal is not, you can totally make it vegan if you wanted to, berries and nuts and peanut butter or whatever. So it's good. But like once in a while, I like some meat too. It's just got more protein, I guess. But I mean, I can do tofu too, but I just can't do it every day. You know, like it's gross.
Yeah, I remember when we lived together many moons ago that you had this very good cooking mentality, which I stuck with me ever since. You asked me, would you rather, like, if you had the option, like, get all your nutrition and food in a pill?
Did I ask you that? Oh my gosh, I keep asking people that to the same day. I didn't know I asked you. This has been like a 15-year thing.
because don't you find it a pain to like source everything and like mix it into something that's healthy and nutritious? Yeah. What if you had the option to just have like what you need in a pill and just move on from there?
And what was your answer?
And I was like, yeah, it's kind of the same question. It's like, yeah, I understand that that might solve some things, but certain parts of like enjoyment of life is tasting and making the food and enjoying it and the whole experience at the table with friends. And if everyone's at a table, like, let's pop this pill together and then go for a walk later. I don't know if you'd have the same experience.
I didn't, now that you say it, I'm sort of sparking a memory that I asked this because the impetus behind this question was from Back to the Future 2, where they had this thing where if you watch the movie or 2 or 1, they put like a little thing into a microwave and they like warm it for 5 seconds and it becomes a meal. And so from there, I've always asked this. So I asked my wife this, and I was just talking about this the last week. I mean, I asked my wife this years ago, but this is a question I still kind of bring up. So I've actually modified the question now as of last week. It's no longer, because I used to tell people, if you had to choose a pill for the rest of your life that gave you all your nutrients and you still were satiated, but you'd never get sick because it was exactly what you needed versus real food, what would you do? And 95% of people say real food. I'm the only weirdo that says 5%.
So you would take the pill?
I take the pill personally because I'm not a foodie. For me, it's like, yeah, I like going out to eat and everything like that, but I'd rather just be healthy. But anyway, but I've modified the question to say that if you could all, like, you know, it's not for the rest of your life, it's for any meal, you know, like say, for example, breakfast was too heavy this morning. So for lunch, you're popping a like a chicken burrito pill or something like that? Would you be able, would you do it? And then people obviously would I say yes to that, because it's not a permanent thing. But I've come to realize that all our young people listening, like when you're young, you really think you can eat anything and do anything you want. And as you grow older, like you really feel it. Like if you eat something garbage or bad, like you really, it gets to you. I don't know if you feel that. Like that's like I could eat 6 pieces of KFC when I was 20 and nothing would happen. And if I eat more than 2 pieces now, I feel like I'm going to die. Right. And so I have to be, yeah, have to be moderate with my food choices.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that, I mean, I'm still somewhat slim, and I'm amazed in some respects. I mean, I have a pretty good diet, but like, if I think about some of the binges I did when I was a teenager, totally, and like just growing, always hungry, and I would like have these Eggo waffles for breakfast and have like...
Eggos are great.
Yeah. I can't get them here and I really miss them, but like I would have like entire packets of them, and then I would, yeah, come home from school and I would eat like these President's Choice cookie packets and I'd eat the whole thing. And I'd be like, that's disgusting. But
yeah,
I would totally eat the whole thing and I wouldn't feel sick. I'd just be ready for the next meal.
Totally.
So that's definitely not advisable throughout your life. But
I could drink like gallons of milk in a sitting. I could drink Coca-Colas, chicken, like really unlike, I wouldn't, yeah, I would really help. And then like, I think one thing with these kinds of foods are that there's an addictive quality to them. So I think like once you get hooked on them, that's like what you try to go back to. Like I used to eat McDonald's all the time growing up. It was so bad. And so I think now I don't go as often. I mean, once in a while I will, but I can definitely see people getting addicted to it. So just putting that in perspective, these people have not been introduced to these types of foods. So the foods they are quote unquote addicted to are just healthy lifestyle community foods, right? So like, If you don't even know what McDonald's is it even an issue for you in life, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure if you just threw down a packet of like a quarter pounder meal to some people in Sardinia,
they'd die.
Most like, of them would be like, they'd say, this is disgusting. What are you throwing in front of me? The difference would be the kids. So I think it's like starts with, like you said, when you're young. Because if you give like a kid an iPad and let them watch YouTube all day, then they'll do it. And if you let them like drink like soft drinks and eat McDonald's, then like
they'll do
that's
it.
Why, yeah. That's why they need parents. They need parents to go stop this bad behavior. Enough of this stuff. But like once these companies know little happy meals and little toys, once you got them when they're young, it's a lifelong habit in some respects. So I hope that these people in Italy and Okinawa and California can continue to carry it on throughout the generations.
What do you think about the third point of society and community for longevity, whether that means being close with family and friends or having some type of good group of people that you interact with? How important is that in your life, minus COVID, minus the 2020 year, generally speaking? Are you a social person? Do you have a group of people? Do you like being alone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind being alone. I've lived alone, and I can do that.
Yeah,
but I think like most people, you just crave human interactions after a while.
Yeah,
and it's super important. Yeah, and it's just kind of depressing to have meals by yourself from time to time, especially like breakfast and lunch is cool. That's fine. But if you have dinner by yourself frequently, I find that really challenging. That's what I found when I was living on my own in Budapest.
Yeah.
I would, thankfully be able to go out for dinners quite a lot and see people.
Yeah.
But I would also be eating on my own for dinners quite a bit. And I was like, this sucks. I want to just talk to someone and explain, how was my day and how was you, and just make the food together, sort of communal experience.
Yeah.
That probably took off a couple of years of my life there.
Just have some beans, add it back on.
So I'm going to make up for it by having some beans. Yeah.
I think,
I don't like, cause like, I don't know what it is like in France. I'm sure there's some pretty good, lifestyle stats there, but French, they say French women don't get fat as an expression, but the French food is very, heavy, very
cream based, oil based, yeah.
A lot of wine, cheese. All the things that you would probably say are not like the Mediterranean diet, and yet they've got pretty good life expectancy data. So I think part of it for all of these things is moderation. Like for me, it would be moderation in human interactions, in exercise and in food.
Yeah,
just don't overdo it.
That's a good point. And my last question to you, well, I have two questions and then we're done.
Are you a psychopath?
Yes, we've already determined.
We've already established that.
What do you think about this idea of having some type of purpose in life? So whether it's religion or family or job or health or something, like a purpose for living, as opposed to just being like, huh? You know, like what's your take on that?
Well, I'm a nihilist, so it's very challenging for me. I believe in that.
Great.
So if believing in nothing is a purpose and striving for no impact, that's also something.
No, but wait, the question was more like, do you believe in taking your nihilism into consideration, like the belief in a purpose of life? That's my question. I don't want to get into specifics on what the purpose
is. I think it's important to give your life meaning, even if you're struggling to give meaning to your life at any particular moment in time.
Yeah,
it's important just to pick something and go for it, and that in itself is empowering and probably healthy and good for your mental health and physical health. Yeah. So like even just this podcast right now, which we started in August. I think this is a very good thing for our well-being.
Yeah.
We have this, it's set in a schedule.
Yeah.
It's productive.
Yeah.
It's a sense of achievement we get after doing it.
Yeah.
And we get some dopamine every time someone clicks on our YouTube or something. So I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah.
So perfect. I basically think, you know, you don't have to have this overarching goal of like, I want to be the president or prime minister or CEO of a company or, for the NHL or any one of these things.
Yeah.
Just about like giving yourself goals and trying to achieve them and having that kind of sense of achievement. And it can really be small, low level stuff, but just having something.
Yeah. I think I would, if you allow me, I think the physicality of longevity is just as important as the mental aspect of longevity. So I think mental health and physical health are both important, not only for longevity, but just for a purposeful, healthy life, right? So there you go. My final question is, taking everything into consideration, would you like to grow old to be 100 or 100 plus? Or do you think that's not something that interests you? What are your thoughts and opinions on this?
Well, I once asked a friend of mine like this question. I said, what would you like to, if you had the option to live forever, would you? Yeah. And he said, no, I'd be bored. It's boring.
Yeah. It's a valid point, I guess.
I don't know. I think it'd be cool to make it. I think I'd like to make it to a healthy 100. That'd be
healthy 100.
I would be if I lost my mental faculties, yes, I'd be okay. I'm more concerned about having my physical things going on. So as long as I can move around and have my functions still working properly until when I'm 100, I think that's okay.
Well, these three case studies, these three places are a testament to the fact that theoretically, I mean, people are living to 100 with both physical and mental capacities intact, right? So it's not like it has to be one.
So should we just... You think if we moved there, that would really help?
Maybe.
Like to rectify all the mistakes you've made?
Maybe.
I don't know. What about you?
If it was a healthy 100, then yeah. Like both keeping mental aspect and physical aspect in it. I see a lot of people who have a lot of physical ailments and they're not even 100 yet. They're like 60s, 70s, 80s. And it's like horrible. Like, I mean, they seem like they're in pain a lot and it's really sad. That is important to me. But for me, I differ from you. I'd really want to keep my mental capacity intact. I think it would be extremely scary to forget who people are or where you are and just kind of feel like, I don't know what Alzheimer's feels like, but like just that aspect. So if I could keep both and get to 100, then sure. And if I couldn't, then as long as I could be healthy, because sometimes I think about the fact that like I'm 35 now, you're 36, 60 is like 30 years away, which is like close but still far. But then like, what do you do for like what do you do until you're 80 or 90 years old? Like, we can't be doing this podcast for 65 years, right? Like,
well, not with that attitude.
That's true. I need a positive attitude. But I mean, I feel like you get older, you have kids or you have a family or you do something with your life, and then they move on, and then you just kind of just waiting it out, right? Like my grandma passed away in October, and she was my, I have two grandmas, obviously. One grandma's alive and one's passed. And she was in her 90s or late 80s. And like for the last few years of her life, she just was bedridden, you know? And I just kind of felt like it wasn't like a really good quality of life. And I think even she sort of was like, yeah, I've done what I had to do, right? So I don't know. But, you know, these people, by the way, like who are in these places, they're not just waiting for death to come knocking. Like they're living their lives with family. They're just continuing. But I don't know if anything's changed in the last 65 years of their life, or, you know what I mean? If it's just a day-to-day thing. So if I had a purpose and if I felt like I was healthy and I wasn't impaired, I'd keep going. But at that point, I just feel like you're just waiting, aren't you? Like,
well, there's, I've just thought of two really good TV shows for you and our listeners, if you haven't seen them already, and they're both BBC. There's one, I forget the name, but it's basically like three or four famous, like semi-famous British celebrities.
Yeah.
And they go around the world to different like retirement communities just to take notes.
Yeah.
On what's, 'cause they're all like celebrities who are about to retire. And they're like, what do you guys do? How do you live your life? Wow. Are you bored? Yeah. And they go to Florida. They go to, I think, Japan, China. Yeah. So that's a really cool one, just to have like that global exposure to what you should be doing in retirement.
Yeah.
And these kind of challenging questions. Yeah. And another fantastic show is called The Supersizers. Okay. I think it's on YouTube only now. It's pretty old.
Yeah.
But it's basically... this food critic and another BBC presenter, they live for a week as if it was like the Edwardian period or the Victorian era, and they eat all of the diet of that week just to see what it's like. And some of them, they get sick and they like, this is horrible. But it's really cool to see like the evolution of diets and like, you know, what you think it was normal to eat on a daily basis compared to what people in different eras did.
Yeah.
And then this guy goes off into like modern diets, to like goes to California and tries different things.
Yeah.
So these are two really good shows. If you combine the two, I'm sure you'd find a nice lesson in there somewhere on
on your life. I think one thing is that like a purpose, we were talking about purpose. Purpose is a big part of it. Like, I don't know how you organize your life or your day or whatever it is. So for me, I sort of have like family, like things that I like, my family, which is a big important thing, you know, and then things for myself. And then things for like work, right? And so for most people, I don't mean to be insulting, but most people, I think work is a means to contribute to the other two aspects, right? Family and friends. But like, I love my work. And so like, for me, work is something that I enjoy to do. So it's like a part of my life. So I think bringing this back is that as you get older into your 70s, 80s, 90s, I think for some people, the idea of retirement is what people look forward towards, because then you can stop doing it. But for others, I think that it's like a really scary thing, especially if you've built your own business or if you're part of something that you love to do, and then you suddenly take it away, right? So like, that's why in a lot of places I work with a lot of my clients, they're like much older and they're still working, because it's just, it's like a form of stress relief for them, right?
Well, yeah, I think.
Like, would you ever like to stop working?
I think it's just important to have various things ticking along. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's good that you're enjoying your work.
Yeah.
But you have to be prepared for the day that, you know, your work may not be there. And what are you going to do next?
That's true. I mean, that's the, what I meant to say was like, if you need to be ready to be able to replace that with something else for your enjoyment and stuff, right?
So, like having hobbies. Or like volunteering in communities, or, you know, that's really common in Ottawa. I even remember like at our age when we were there, like 20, 21, 22, people were like volunteering on boards, working all these extracurricular things. And I was so impressed with people. I'm like, wow, I thought you're just supposed to like do a 9-to-5 job and go home and go to sleep and play some video games or something.
Well, I think, I didn't mean to make
No, of course not. But like, I think a lot of people fall into that trap of they'll work till they're 65 and then they stop and they think, ah, it's retirement. I'm free. I can golf every day.
Yeah.
And they golf for a few times. I'm not referring to you, Mr. Lewis. You have a very good retirement. But like, they have nothing else going on.
Totally.
And they're lost. They're just lost people. And that's really bad for your well-being.
Yeah, that's a really good, you got to stay busy. You got to stay productive with things that you like to do. I think that's important. If work stops, I mean, I think as you get older, I think some people take less time. If you have your own job, or if you don't retire by 65, at least you do significantly less hours, you know, then you start to move. Is retirement still, is the age still 65 in Canada?
I think for our sakes, we're never going to retire because there's not going to be any kind of pension for us. Yeah. I think it's moved to like, here it's 67. It's moved to 67 now.
Yeah.
The official age.
Yeah. I think what I mean, not to go into my retirement plans too much, but there's an age that I've selected with my wife that I'd like to start shifting towards less work, still work, but more of that. And I, if I can get play my cards right, hopefully I can get to it.
40, by 43, maybe.
I hope so.
Free and clear.
So like, yeah, I think there's a balance. And then like, you know, you have your family, you have your friends. I have a good group of friends who unfortunately I don't get to see in person, like yourself and everything like that, but we're doing the best we can. You know, I told someone else, like, I'm too old for new friends. I don't care. My old friends are good enough at this
point. It's a lot of work. Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, my friends and then like, you know, kids and nieces and nephews and this and that. And then you got to find stuff that you like to do for yourself, whether that's reading books or exercising or looking at your computer at stocks or whatever it is, something that piques your interest. Because I don't know if you find this, but I find that the list of things that really kind of like I like doing are minimal. Like, you know, something, I'm at a point where I can tell you that I don't like this food after trying it once, or I don't like this, but like, you know, I like what I like and I'm not trying to be stubborn with it, but I'd rather just cultivate that as opposed to trying like a bunch of new things, which I've already done. And I've just made my opinion based on
like,
that.
What if you had the opportunity to
learn
the piano in retirement, full time.
I guess a good way of saying, I don't have a list of things that I want to do at retirement. My list of things is that I'll do it now. And then if I like it, I'll keep doing it. Right. And so like piano's on my list, actually. That's a good point, you know? So I think that's important too. What about you? Do you have things that you're like saving till retirement, or no, if you're going to do it, you do it now, or you haven't thought about it?
No, I don't really think of retirement really.
You're living your life.
I live in the present as much as possible.
Good for you. Good for you.
But yeah, it's a bit tougher in this Corona times, because I had last year there were some down times for me, and yeah. I thought like maybe I can fill it with like piano lessons and some random stuff. But if you typically had down times in normal pre-Corona life, you could do all these things. You could, you know, take surfing lessons and go get a piano tutor and go somewhere, but now it's all like via Zoom. It's not quite the same, so I don't have the same level of motivation as I probably would have.
One thing, I think I told you this too, one thing and during COVID times, it's actually strange. So I like movies and TV, and I've watched a lot of movies and TV, but during COVID I kind of started just getting sick of digital entertainment. Like there's only so many movies and TV shows you can watch before you kind of get bored, so I shifted more towards like things that were more active and I felt more engaged in. But do you find that like certain forms of entertainment are no longer enjoyable for you?
Well, I went through phases. So through the panic phase of the pandemic, March, April, May, I really couldn't focus on any movie that was more than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's even the then, that the was a struggle.
What are we doing? Yeah.
I was like, why am I watching a movie when there's like zombies in the street?
Maybe that was the movie you're watching.
Maybe that was the movie. Everything was blending in together. Yeah. So now that it's long COVID, I've calmed down a bit and can watch like The Godfather and Lord of the Rings trilogy again. So
great movies. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder what the people in these three places do for entertainment. Like I don't think movies and TV shows, I don't think Netflix is on their radar, but maybe you know,
part of it is like the geography. They both have quite similar weather, you know. It's not extreme weather in Sardinia. Okinawa might have a bit of tropical storms in California. So they're quite lucky in the sense that year round, they can be outdoors, they can be out late and that sort of thing. So that's quite helpful too.
Yeah. Anyways, I advise, we'll post some links on our page. People take a look. It's really interesting, and try to adapt some of these things into your life.
Yeah, like listen to the Super Respectable podcast while you're out for your daily walk. And it's a very good length. Our podcasts are typically an hour, which is a good amount of time to be moving around.
Yeah, of course. And have a cup of beans in your hand while you're walking.
And eat some beans while you're doing it. Perfect.
There you go. Anyways, Dave, I wish you a long and happy life as per our topic. And
I wish you the same. Yes,
I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.